You unlock this door with the key of imagination. Beyond it is another dimension. A dimension of sound. A dimension of sight. A dimension of mind. You're moving into a land of both shadow and substance, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
What is happening?
It's all I don't know.
You're listening to the AME Radio Show.
Welcome to the show, everybody. I'm your host, Jason Dowd. We got a great show for you guys today, so sit back, relax, and enjoy as we talk about everything art, music, and entertainment. Now, we have a couple great guests coming up, which we're really excited to talk to. We have Janina Esquivel, and she's going to be talking to us about her acting career and what she's got going on. She's been on scene on HBO and a couple other great networks. Then we have Lauren Kleinman coming on. She's an author of a book. Actually, she's a co-author of the book, and it talks about how you perceive your body and how people actually had a hatred towards their bodies. They wrote it down in words and they put it together in this book. And I think it's going to be something that is tear-jerking, but also something I think that we really need to see and understand, because everybody has something about them that they don't like. They hate themselves sometimes, and that's just wrong. And this book will show you from actual letters from people that wrote it to themselves about what they didn't like about their body. And I think this is going to be extremely powerful for you guys to check out and read and understand. So when you get a chance now, please go check out our website. Not right now, wait till after the show. It is www.theamemagazine.com. That is the AME Experience. So it has our television, radio, and magazine all in one spot. Everything's archived. If you miss something, don't worry, it's there. If you want to see what we have going on, go check it out. Plus, it has a link to all of our social media platforms. So if you're on social media, we want you to follow us or like us or whatever the terminology is for that particular platform there as well. And we have a link to our actual apps. Yes, we have one for our iOS app for Apple and also Android. They're free. Now, we do have a slight problem going on with the Apple. The guy that decided to design it for us and, you know, was hosting it decided they didn't want to be in business anymore, so they took down everything, so we lost the downloads for that. But the app will still work until we have a brand new app, so you just won't be able to download it. But we're working on that as well, so hopefully that will be back very soon. Okay, so now I want to get into some of the crazy things that we have to talk to you about today. Now, this isn't art, music, and entertainment. It's just funny and dumb stuff going on, and I think that we're going to attack it and see what's going on. So everybody knows about the Tide Pod Challenge. Yeah, that's right. The Tide Pod Challenge is a brand new fad going around millennials, high school kids, and middle school kids. And what they are doing is they are eating Tide Pods. Yes, Tide Pods, the stuff that you clean your clothes with. And they eat them to see what happens. You know what? I think they know what's going to happen. It is a poison. It is a poison that's used to clean clothes with, especially getting out really hard stains. What do you think is going to happen? It says that if you eat it, you can die. And 90% of us that eat them will die or have brain damage or liver damage or kidney damage or something that will be irreversible for the rest of their lives. I don't understand why people are doing this, but it seems to be a hot new fad going around, and I think it's because people want attention. But what people are starting to demand now is that Tide pull these pods off the shelves. Okay. Now, I'm trying to figure out what's dumber. The people telling Tide that they must pull their pods off the shelves because people are dumb enough to eat them, or the people that are dumb enough to eat them? Why should Tide have to suffer because somebody doesn't understand the word don't ingest it? It's written right on the bag, right on the box, whatever it may come in, yet they do it anyways. You know, we can't keep banning things because people are too stupid to not follow the instructions that's given or use common sense. You know, we're constantly jeopardizing other people's things and other people's enjoyment of things that don't necessarily have the same effect. You know, I use Tide Pods, but I don't eat them. But I'm not going to be able to use them or get the benefit from them because some idiot is eating them. So what we're going to end up having to do now, and I don't even know if this is going to work, but you know when you go in to buy like a methamphetamine or something like that, you have to put in your driver's license and they have to, you know, kind of screen you and you have to check out your driver's license, make sure you're 18. That is going to be what's going to happen with these Tide Pods, but it's not going to matter. If they're an idiot, it doesn't matter if they're 14 and an idiot or 75 and an idiot. They're still going to do it anyways. I don't know. this is just so crazy. I don't even know what's going on with this world, but we are just doing some dumb stuff for 5 minutes of fame. Is it worth it to have a lifetime of disability for 5 minutes of fame on a social media platform in front of people that don't even care about you? Think about that for a minute. Next thing that's coming up is the world is flat. Yes, that has come back. I thought we got rid of that thousands of years ago, but I guess we haven't. So right now, people are making some pretty strong cases for the fact that we are living on a flat earth. Here's case number one, okay? Have you ever seen the horizon or the curve of the earth from standing in one spot? No, probably haven't. But that's because you're not looking at the right spot. If you go up to the top of the Himalayan mountains and look down, you will see the curve of the earth. The problem with it is most people don't go up to the go up there for either monetary reasons, or they just don't want to go rock climbing and mountain climbing to the summit of almost touching the atmosphere. So they're not going to know what that's going to look like. But if you're looking, take a look at a perspective now. You're going to stand here and look as far as you can see. And probably the most distance that you're going to be able to see is 3 to 4 miles, depending if there's anything in its way. So in other words, if you're out in the desert, you probably have a better view and you could see further just because there's nothing obscuring your view. And even then, you're only looking about 10 miles. The Earth is thousands of miles, so the curve of that circle is going to be so minute, you're not going to really know it's there, okay? So, okay, now let's go to the second part. When you look up into the sky and you see the moon, you never see the other side of it. How come? Well, that's because of the fact that it is rotating at the same projection we are, okay? That means it is rotating on its axis to the same type of rotation that we are. And of course, we're not going to see the other side of it. But if there is a shadow, the shadow would have to come from a sphere, not a flat object, right? Because somehow that sunlight is being reflected from the Earth and putting a shadow on the moon. And when you see the shadow of the moon, guess what you see? A curve. You don't see it flat. Otherwise, it would cover up the Earth completely. Next part is, well, you know, we've never seen the other side of the Earth. Of course you haven't, because there is no other side of the Earth. You just go around and around in circles. If that was the case, if we sailed from, let's just say, California, Los Angeles, and we're going to head out to a certain spot, eventually there would be an edge that we would reach and we would be able to look right down. That's the problem. We would see the edge of the Earth. We would fall off the edge of the Earth. Now, have you ever seen all these other planets? I mean, technically, if they're on the same rotation and they're flat, we would see the edge flipping around like a coin. If you were to take a quarter and spin it, you know how it spins? You would see the edge. You would continually see the edge, right? Okay. So the next part of that is, if that was the case, then the entire Earth would have the same time frame all the time, which means it would be sunny in Asia as it would be sunny in North America. And it would be sunny in the North Pole and sunny in the South Pole, right? Because it's all flat. There's nothing to curve to block the sun. But we have noticed that in the Antarctic, sometimes the winters can last almost 6 months where there is absolutely no sun. That can't happen on something flat. And now the last thing that the guy decided to do, you've probably seen this, the guy takes this piece of water, spills it over a lemon, and says, guess what? If the world was flat, like when he puts it on a plate, it captures the water. And that's why we are flat, because we don't see the water evaporating. Well, have you ever heard of a thing called centrifugal force? If I was to put water in a bag, okay, and spin it around in circles, you know, upside down, the water wouldn't spill because the centrifugal force keeps it together. That is what we have on the Earth. We are spinning. Therefore, we have the centrifugal force. We have what they call gravity, which pushes everything down and keeps us here. That's why we don't float away. I guess people don't go to school anymore. Anyways, that's just some fun stuff that I wanted to pick on today because I think it's fun. I'm tired of the humdrum everyday news and doom and gloom out there. So let's just have some fun with some stupid stuff that's going on out there and just live a little, right? All right, guys, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have Janina on the line, so don't go anywhere.
Do you love horror? The strange and unusual, fantasy creatures or urban legends? Do you want to step inside a dream or nightmare? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then you should check out internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd and his award-winning photographic collections by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com. Get inside his mind and experience his inner weird.
Your time hasn't come yet, baby. You got a lot of dreams to go. Your time hasn't come yet, baby.
Hey guys, it's Jason Dowd, and I got a special announcement for you. You know, it's hard to believe, but 2018 marks the 50th anniversary of Elvis Presley's Speedway. Co-star Victoria Paige Meyerink will be making personal appearances throughout the year, sharing her memories of Elvis. Visit Meyerink.com, that's Meyerink.com, to find out where or to host a screening or Speedway event of your own with Victoria. She's going to be bringing candid, special behind-the-scenes memories of working with Elvis. Again, to find out how you can have your own personal screening or Speedway event with Victoria, just go to Meyerink.com. Meyerink.com.
The little boy next door who only makes you sore is gonna someday turn your head, but right now.
Hey, it's your girl, Alicia G, on AME Radio. Be sure to listen to my new song, Cash and Nap, and be sure to follow me on all my social media at Alicia G World. Love y'all.
Sunshine head of my way. Sit ready, do time, sit ready.
Welcome back to the show, everybody. We have on the line with us our special guest. Her name is Janina Esquivel, and she is an actress who's been seen in some pretty cool things. We're going to be talking to her about her career and all the things that she has coming out and things that she's done last year, which has been quite a few from what I've seen in her IMDb. And you've seen her in Insomnio, Listen, Mysteries of the Unexplained, The Black Dahlia, and she's coming out with Westworld and Guardian in 2018, so we're excited to talk to her about everything that she has going on. Welcome to the show, Janina. How are you doing today?
Hi, Jason. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be talking to you. I'm doing really well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. It's been a rough day, but I'm keeping it real. Just keep it going, right?
Oh, yeah. That's what you got to do.
So, I really love talking to people, especially about things that they're most passionate about and the things that they get to do, because I wish I could have been an actor when I was growing up, but I never took that step. And it's fun to see how people get into it and, you know, what makes it so special for them. So when did you get interested in acting?
Well, I mean, I've been interested in it. You know, it's one of those things that just as long as I can really remember, you know, and it all started with, like, a camcorder, my dad's camcorder.
Yes.
When I was a kid. And I loved making home movies, you know, and, like, little home TV shows and that kind of thing. But I didn't officially really start, you know, training for it until I was 15 and I went to boarding school. And that was when I really just started getting into the whole, you know, theater scene at my school, I guess you could say.
You know, I remember those days with the camcorder. I used to follow everybody around. They hated it. Oh, my God, did they hate it. But one of the cool things that I tried to do when I was little is I put out, I did my own little home shopping network. And so I put, like, my teddy bears up for sale, and I put up all this other stuff, and I put the little thing, the little cards on the side. I had fun doing it, but annoyed everybody else.
That's awesome. I know. I could never get my family to act in my plays and in my TV show, so it was always the stuffed animals. They all played characters.
Did they do a good job?
They were pretty good, you know. They were pretty good. The person doing their voices, a.k.a. me, did a great job there.
But see, that's what's so cool, because that's where creativity starts. And it's things like that that I think we overlook as parents. you know, with the kids and say, wow, you know, this could be something, you know, because if somebody has that type of an interest and they're able to put that kind of stuff together, even at the young age, you know, there's got to be something sparking inside of them. And that could lead to some amazing things.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I was lucky that, like, I did have sort of more tolerant parents who let me, you know, create the entire, like, stage using all the furniture in the living room. So that was good because, you know, they let me kind of follow that.
Now, you've done theater, too, though, haven't you? Because I saw something about you going up to a place in Connecticut and was, training there, too. Am I right?
Yeah, actually. Yeah, that's right. I primarily trained for theater, and that's mostly what I had done until I moved to L.A. But, you know, I majored in theater when I went to college in Philadelphia, and I went to a program, the British American Drama Academy, over in Oxford, England, in association with the Yale School of Drama. So I went and I trained there as well. So, yeah, it was primarily theater for me for a long time.
You know, I was born and raised in Bristol, Connecticut, and so I went to a lot of those places, and I saw a lot of great things, because they were able to put on, you know, some, school theatrics, but I've also seen some of the big-time stuff, too. And, you know, those are special places. I really wish I could describe them to people, but if they had the chance to go, they really need to, and go see some
plays. Wow, I didn't know you're from Bristol, Connecticut. That's so great.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love Connecticut. I loved my time there. It's such a beautiful state, and there really is, the opportunity to see these incredible productions there.
You know what I love about Connecticut? It's a great place for the background and location scenes for some great horror movies.
Oh, I would believe that. After having been there during October, yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, I loved it up there. I do miss it myself. So it was really cool to see that you went to a school up there. I probably have been to it because my school used to take me to a lot of different places all around Connecticut from, border to border.
Oh, were you playing were you playing away games kind of a thing, or?
Well, they were just really big into the arts and stuff like that where I went to school. Mm-hmm. It was a private school, so we used to go to all different types of things. We went to the Boston Symphony Orchestra when they would come to Connecticut, and the New York Symphony Orchestra, and we would go to all these little productions and all these different schools that had plays. And, you know, that was some special times for me. I do remember them very well, and I really wish we had that opportunity when I moved down here to Florida, but we just didn't.
Wow, that's so cool. Yeah, I got to do a lot of that kind of thing, you know, when I was there. And I think it really sort of helped encourage that, like, passion, mm-hmm. you know?
Now, theater is so much different than, you know, being on a television show or a movie because everything's live. So how did you get over your stage fright of going out there and worrying, am I going to forget this or anything like that? Did you have a plan in mind? How did you prepare for something like that?
For a film, you mean?
No, for stage, because you're live, you know, you can't mess up. So, I mean, how do you get yourself, you know, to stop thinking like that? Because I know I do stuff like that all the time.
Oh, no, it's incredibly, I mean, you never get over that, I feel like. You always have those butterflies, flying around in your stomach beforehand. But, you know, everyone comes up with their own rituals to sort of get over that fear, you know. Everyone has their own, like, methods and processes. I would use music a lot. You know, I would be, you know, on my headphones just listening to certain, like, songs that I had picked up to sort of connect me to my characters and drop me into my circumstances. And that was a big help for me when I discovered that, because if I was just standing backstage listening to what was going on stage, you know, I was a bundle of nerves.
So you went to L.A. to become an actress and follow your passion for doing movies and television and stuff like that. What was your first big break?
Well, it was probably, I mean, I did get to do some plays out here, but I think the big one was getting to work for an HBO show. You know, I got to work on the season of Insecure. Mm-hmm. And after that, I got to work on Westworld. You know, I got to film for that. And I ended up doing You're the Worst for FX. So it was sort of this string of, like, TV shows that I got to do that, you know, I could feel were opening doors for me.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of different things to make it in this industry. And one of them is you have to kind of be accessible to where the work is. So moving up to LA was pretty intense, I'm sure, but it was a necessity. So, you know, I've seen, like, you were in the Mysteries of the Unexplained with the Black Dahlia, and she did that same thing. She came from a place, moved over here to you know, be a star, knowing that it's so scary because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't have necessarily a great place to live at first, or something. You know, she lived out of a hotel.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really have to give up a lot, but the rewards that come from that can be astronomical. So, how did you decide this is what I'm going to do, knowing that, you know, this is definitely a gamble, I mean, to make it, and how did you decide I'm going to stick with it?
Well, first of all, playing Elizabeth Short, you know, the Black Dahlia, that was terrifying.
Yes.
Because, you know, she did exactly that. You know, she moved out here, and it did not go well for her, and that was kind of scary. You know, I didn't want to see that echoed in my life.
No.
But honestly, like, I had a bit of a health scare while I was in Costa Rica, and I was still in this process of figuring out, am I really going to do this? Is this what I'm going to do with the rest of my life? You know, because they always tell you, if you can love and be happy doing anything else, then do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a life of uncertainty, and it is a life of insecurity. So, you know, I was going through that whole process, and I had a health scare. I got a skin cancer diagnosis. And I feel like that really changed everything. You know, that changed my life. After I got cured, I just knew. I was like, all right, that's it. Life is short, and you just got to jump. You got to do it, even if you're not seeing the safety net at the bottom. Sometimes you got to just take that risk, and I knew it was kind of now or never.
And, you know, taking that risk is scary for people. A lot of people don't really want to pull that string to get it going, but you always have to have in the back of your head, I would think, the idea that everything's going to be okay and everything will just work out. You just got to be diligent to go out there and find those opportunities for yourself, and not give up a day job until you find those opportunities, I'm sure.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, you got to find other ways to, like, you know, add to it, you know, other ways to support yourself, you know, in between. I mean, I didn't just graduate with a theater major. I actually graduated with an economics major, too, because I knew at some point, like, I should at least know something about finance if I'm going to end up acting for a living. But, yeah, you have to be prepared to work really hard, and you have to hope that, you know, that bit of luck will come through for you. Mm-hmm. But I was lucky. You know, I'm lucky in the sense that I do have a family back in Costa Rica, and I knew that, hey, if things don't go well, I can always come home.
That's true. That is absolutely true. Now,
yeah,
you know, going out there, you've had some pretty cool roles so far. What would be a role that you would absolutely want to play? It's like it would be your dream role to be able to have this type of a part in some type of movie or television. What type of character would that be if you had that opportunity?
Oh, you know, I'm always, actors say this all the time, and I guess it's cliche, but but I've always drawn to playing, you know, an unlikable character, some kind of a villain or somebody who just, you know, doesn't exhibit, like, the likable qualities that characters exhibit, mostly because I always find that they're more complex. You have to dig a little deeper to find, you know, their justifications, to figure out the why behind the way they are. And that's always exciting. You know, that's always really fascinating. So, yeah, I'm always looking for sort of those characters that, you know, just on first read you say, oh, well, they're not that likable. I feel like there's always so much more going on there that you can find.
Mm-hmm. And it's also probably fun to play something that's completely opposite of your actual personality, because that's got to be the hardest thing to put yourself into. And, you know, it's like if you always love everybody and you love everything around you, but now you got to hate everything and want to destroy it. That's got to be hard to put together and make believable, I would think.
Oh yeah, that's true. You know, and I always usually I get typecast, you know, in the more like motherly good girl, like girl next door kind of characters. So just the opportunity to do that, you know, to actually be like, nah, I'm the villain, and to do it convincingly is, you know, it's a challenge. It's one that I look forward to. I embrace it.
See, if I had to start off with something like that, I think the way I would get into character is go up and knock somebody's coffee off their table. Just, you know, it's completely harmless, but it's a complete dick thing to do. But, but it's like, see how hardcore I am?
you never know where you're going to find the character. You're like, look at me, I dropped your coffee. It's so bad.
See, I rock this role, you know, I'm hardcore.
I'm like, that's it. I got it. I got her.
Wow. So tell us about some of the things that you got into. I mean, I love the mysteries of the mysteries of the unexplained. I watch that all the time. How did you get into something like that, and why did you decide to play the Black Dahlia?
Well, I auditioned for the character, you know, and I got the call, and I just, I had always been fascinated by her. You know, it is one of those sort of legendary unsolved murders, and it was that feeling of, you know, understanding her, you know, understanding this actor who moved here alone and is new to the city and is trying to figure out her place, and you never, you know, it's scary. So I loved that, you know. I wanted to play around with that and to just to get also to live in that era, you know, like in those times. It's it was exciting for me. It was interesting to be able to like go back in time.
And you know, I think when she moved to Hollywood, don't quote me on this, but I think she stayed at the historic Roosevelt Hotel, which is also where Marilyn Monroe came to when she first came to Hollywood, and it seems like that place is haunted, which is really cool, because I love hauntings, too. I love the paranormal, too. I get into all that kind of stuff. But
well, actually, this, you know, this mystery is also plays around with the idea that there were sightings of Elizabeth Short, you know,
yes.
That there was, like, a haunting going on, you know. So I did get to play her ghost as well. There were some paranormal things going on there, too, after her death.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, what's amazing
yeah,
is so that it's so many years and nobody knows what happened.
Yeah, they still don't know. They still don't know, and they don't even have a clue. It's not like there's, you know, leads or anything. It's just nothing.
And the spot that she was found at is now somebody's front yard, which has got to be freaky in itself.
That's got to be scary. That's got to be really scary. I don't know if I'd be able to take that on. I would say that would drop the price, you know, considerably for that house.
That's right. Well, you may have a tenant that doesn't want to pay any rent, and she's probably a squatter now. So yeah, you definitely have two problems in your hand.
You're taking that squatter on, you know, and who knows how much she likes you.
That's right. So tell me about some of the other projects that you have done in the past. What have been some of your favorite roles in some of these films and television shows that you've done?
Well, as far as plays, I actually did get to play Blanche DuBois in Streetcar Named Desire.
Nice.
Which was just incredible. I mean, she's like, you know, they say that she's the Hamlet for women, and she is, you know. She's this character that you can just chip away at and keep going, and you'll never really find her. You could always work on her. But right after I did that, I was cast as Stella, her sister, in the same play. So it was cool getting to, like, play those two sides of the coin, you know, seeing it from Blanche's perspective and then turning around and seeing it from Stella's perspective. That was this whole, you know, acting exercise in itself. And then with the TV shows, I really loved being on You're the Worst, you know, the FX show.
Yeah.
Because I'd actually been a huge fan of the show for some time. I mean, ever since it had premiered. And then, you know, 4 years later, getting to be there on set with, you know, with Chris Gere, who's, like, the main actor in that, was... I mean, it was, like, surreal. And I was playing a Khaleesi impersonator.
Okay.
You know, from Game of Thrones?
Yes.
I was playing a Khaleesi cosplayer. So, you know, I was in the full Khaleesi costume, and she's just, like, my favorite character, and getting to be on one of my favorite shows, it was just a surreal day of work.
So what do you like most about some of these roles? Is it being able to dress up in all these cool outfits and play somebody different, or is it just the ability to travel and see different places through a video, of course? Sometimes you do go to different places, I'm sure, but what do you like about playing a character the most and being in these things? What makes it the most fun for you?
I mean, maybe this is simplifying it, but it really, it just takes me back to being a kid, you know, it takes me back to this feeling of like, I'm playing pretend, you know, and I'm getting to play act, and I'm getting to keep my imagination open and keep it flexible, which is something that we just, I feel like we don't get to engage too much in as adults.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just always exciting. I mean, it's just, I feel lucky, honestly, that I get to work in that. And it is about the costume, and that is a part of it, you know, and it is a part of, you know, the sets are a part of it, and feeling like you're traveling in time or place is a big part of it, too. But I love being at home and just creating the circumstances around the character, because it is that imagination work of who are they, and where have they been, and how did they grow up, and who were their parents, and have they ever been in love, and, you know, just coming up with all these answers, coming up with these stories for these people is... it's so exciting, you know, it's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. So we got
I feel like a kid again.
So we got just a few minutes left, and I know that you have some new stuff coming out called The Westworld and The Guardian. So tell us a little bit about what you can say about it. How can they find this show? And tell us what your character in each one of them, and you know, what they can expect when they do get to see it on television.
Well, Westworld is an HBO show. You know, it's season one already came out, and it was a big hit and everything. And season two will be coming out this year. And it's set in the future, and it's about a theme park, but a futuristic theme park that's set in the West, in the Wild West, where the clients that come can actually get to enjoy and experience and live what being in a Western movie would have been like. And so the sets are incredible. The costumes are incredible. You know, you're transported back to the Wild West. And the people who actually live in this world are all robots. You know, they're all cyborgs, I guess. And they are starting to exhibit traits of human, you know, human characteristics. So it's that kind of thing. Are they human? I mean, they're created by us, but are they human? And what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I got to play one of them, you know, I got to play one of those, and I got to be, you know, in the Western costume and to live in that world. And it's just, it was just very enriching. It was such a learning experience. And I got to work with some pros, some real pros, you know, of like the industry. So, I mean, yeah, so it's an exciting show. It's a lot of fun. It's very interesting. It's really engaging. There's a lot of philosophical questions that get brought up. And then Guardian is a short film that will be, you know, in festivals. And that one is about, I play, it's set during the big crash, you know, the big crash of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And it's set on Wall Street. And I play the assistant to this guy who is just unraveling with this mortgage crash. And he loses his sight. Inexplicably, he loses his sight. And, yeah, he's not sure why, and I don't know why, and we're here in this kind of high-stress environment trying to figure out what's wrong with him while also trying to save the company. So, yeah, it's an interesting film.
Really cool. So how can people find you or any of these shows that you have coming out? Obviously, the Westworld is going to be on HBO. But mm-hmm. how can they follow you and see what you have going on and you know, see any of the new projects you have coming out?
Yeah, they can find me on Facebook under Janina Esquivel, my name, and same in on Instagram. I'm on Instagram, Janina Esquivel. And, yeah, I keep these things up to date. You know, I'm working on a pilot now. With these great filmmakers, and yeah, so stay tuned. Hopefully that'll get picked up.
Well, I'm so glad you get a chance to do something that you love for a living, because that's very important, and it's not work when you love doing what you do. And you know, I can't wait to see what you got coming out in the 2018 here, and I will definitely tune into Westworld so that way we can see you in action.
Okay, yeah, definitely. Please do.
And thank you for coming on, and you were a great guest. I had a lot of fun, and we wish you all the best.
All right, Jason. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
No problem. All right, guys, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we got more, so don't go anywhere.
Jason Dowd of Imagination Art Studios is proud to announce the release of his steampunk collection, which is currently on tour across the country. There you will see beautiful handmade masks from Venice, Italy, that accentuate beautiful women to create amazing stories and feelings to those who visit the collection. Each photo series has a theme, mask, authentic props, and beautifully elaborate outfits, all collaborated in the mind of Jason Dowd to create the right emotion and feeling. The masks come from a shop in Epcot at the Italian Pavilion, where all these photos are on display for you to see. This is one of the biggest accomplishments of his career, having his work at Disney. Come see the beautiful first release of the series, which includes Distressed Dancer, Spanish Serenade, The Pied Piper, and Reaching for the Czars. You can see them in person or online at www.imaginationartstudios.com. For more information, visit the website. Again, it's imaginationartstudios.com. Our Facebook is Imagination Art Studios. Twitter is at Dowd Studios. And Instagram is at Jason Dowd. Come and be mesmerized by the masks and the stories behind them.
Hi, everyone. My name is Darius Norman, the author of the new book entitled Rewriting Financial Rules. Have you wondered and needed advice in terms of repairing and building your credit? Do you need strategies to boost and to see quick results in building your credit? Do you need to learn how to protect yourself against financial predatory companies like debt collectors? Well, look no further. Rewriting Financial Rules is the perfect book to give you the step-by-step process to adjust and make those changes financially.
Hi, this is Jamie Lunner. You remember me from Melrose Place? I listen to AME Radio Show.
Welcome back, everybody. We have on the line with us two special guests. Their name is Lauren Kleinman and Amy Archer. They are co-editors of a brand new book called My Body, My Words, and it's actually kind of in line with Body Awareness Month. So welcome, ladies, to the show. How are you doing today?
Hi, I'm well. Thanks for having us.
Oh, you're welcome. So this is something I've always been pretty passionate about myself, because as a photographer, I see a lot of people that just get body shamed, and it bothers me that people have such issues with themselves, and I really wish we could stop it, you know, because a lot of it is self-induced, and a lot of it's just, you know, lack of their, it's like they just don't have enough confidence in themselves, and they really should, because they're not that bad. So what brought this particular book up, and what is the book about? Obviously, you know, helping with body awareness and stuff, but how can, what's the whole book about?
Lauren, you want to tell them?
Yeah, sure.
So Amy and I got together, what is it, about 2 years ago now, Amy? And we were trying to, like, kind of think of a project that we could work on together that really focused on bodies. And I think originally our plan was actually to have people write letters to their body and, you know, submit these letters, you know, through a submission call, and then sort of have the anthology based upon these kind of secret letters to your body. But it kind of morphed into really a collection of voices, a collection of bodies, where we really opened up a submission call. And, you know, in addition to having general submissions, we had some featured writers involved, so authors like Martha Frankel and Beverly D'Onofrio from Riding in Cars with Boys, and really kind of looking at not just body positivity, but really to explore bodies from the perspective of your body. Amy, did you want to add a little bit to that?
Yeah, I just want to say, for me, this was extremely personal. Lauren and I both wrote memoirs about essentially our bodies. Would you agree with that, Lauren?
Yeah, absolutely.
So when I wrote my memoir, Fat Girl Skinny, it was about, I had lost 100 pounds, and it had been about coming to terms with my body for the first time. But what set me really on this trajectory was I have 11-year-old daughters, And I started to see body image and shame manifest itself in them at maybe 7, 8 years old. And it felt almost spontaneous in them because I'm very conscious to not talk about weight or anything in front of them or to expose them to that. So for me, it became almost a personal mission to change the narrative of this, to change the tone of this conversation for them as they turn into young women, if that makes sense.
It does. Now, obviously, writing this book, you're gonna experience a lot of things. You're gonna hear a lot of different stories and stuff like that. What has been one of the biggest factors that you can say of from all the people that have written these little memoirs to you is the cause of maybe a body shaming situation? Is it peer pressure? Is it just self-worth? What was one of the biggest things that you guys ran into?
I'm seeing a lot, like, as I'm going over it again, editing it finally, like, for the final edit, I can't believe how much our mothers influence us. Lauren, do you agree with that?
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
I read this book once, and I forget who the author was, but the title was When I Say One Thing and Mean My Mother, and this has never been more... Sure for me, and as a mother myself, it totally freaks me out, but a lot of parental influence, some peer influence, but a lot of our writers are our age or older, so like they're not really influenced by social media at an important time. It was more peers and the opposite sex and parents. We do have some younger writers in the anthology, but they're not really writing about the same thing, right, Lauren? Like,
yeah. I mean, it's really funny. Like, yeah. It's really funny because, but like as you're reading this book, and yeah, absolutely, there's definitely that parental influence, and I can really say that you said that. I can remember my mother, going downstairs, like, in the middle of the night. I remember, like, the beefaroni, like, Chef Boyardee. Like, I remember her, like, eating it out of the can, And it kind of, as gross as it sounds, it kind of started this, it's okay to, like, snack at night, but not, like, snack.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
have a meal,
Yeah.
And I kind of, now that I'm thinking about it, it's, I'm finding myself doing a lot of the same things that I watched my mother do in terms of eating habits.
Yes.
Although
My mother was the opposite. She said to me once, I don't understand why people with food addiction just can't be addicted to something healthy like salad.
Because it doesn't taste as good.
Right. Like she was always trying to fix me because she doesn't have that bad relationship with food. For her, it's just a means of survival. So you're seeing many different stories like this in the anthology, things that parents have said, role models that these authors have had, and then becoming mothers themselves is a big, I think there's a few of those in there, like especially Abigail Thomas, who's one of my absolute favorite writers of all time. She wrote Safekeeping, which is one of the best memoirs ever, in my opinion. She writes about becoming a grandmother. And she gave us a little snippet from Safekeeping that she wrote when she was in her maybe 30s. So it was neat to see her image of her own body change over those decades that she had written that.
Now, I know, Amy, you said you had some issues with yourself because you are very passionate about this particular thing.
I have a lot of issues.
What about you, Lauren? Did you have the same thing? Is this one of the reasons you decided to do something like this, too, or is it just a project that you decided to pick up on?
I think it's kind of been almost really my whole life's work, I think, and something that's not really going to change. And I think I've definitely gone through it. I was never a skinny kid. I mean, I remember being in fourth grade and, did you ever like have to do that? Like it was like the nurse's day or something and everybody has to line up and get weighed in. And there's, everybody's like this healthy, normal weight. And I'm like, 120 pounds, at like in like fifth grade.
you know? And I think that really stuck with me. And I remember reading this article about how there are some women, some men, people who will sometimes not go to the doctor even if they're not feeling well because they're afraid of getting weighed in.
Really?
And the funny thing is that when I read that, I was like, oh, you know, that kind of sounds like, you know, BS. But there are definitely some times, like, when I first go to the doctor where I'm just like, I don't, you know, I try to do everything I can do to kind of distract them from weighing me, you know? And I think it's like
unless you're down a little bit, and then you're
exactly.
like, oh, can I jump on the scale?
Exactly. But, you know, the thing is, I know with myself that between weight, between, you know, going through a sexual assault, I think, you know, my body has kind of almost been like this war zone to me, you know, and I think I definitely write a lot about that, write a lot about, you know, love and letting go and healing and things like that. But I think a combination of, you know, growing up heavy and being made fun of and then going through the assault that I went through, I think really had a very large impact as to really how I viewed my body.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that Lauren hit on something there. Quite a few of these essays have that little spark or hint or idea of assault in some
mm-hmm.
way. So many of these men and women have had some sort of assault in their past that has led to a separation from their bodies, and now they're reclaiming them. So there's such inspirational pieces in this anthology. There really are, I think.
Yeah. You know, you hit on a point there, because I was never really ashamed of my body. I was more ashamed of my features. You know, I was really, really skinny, and I could never gain weight no matter how hard I tried. And so I was picked on because I was little, you know, and I guess my family was like that too, and I learned that later out in life. But see, the thing is, when I was in fifth grade, I was 4 foot, maybe 8. I was a really tiny kid. But I had size 9.5 shoes, so I looked like one of those big field mice out there, you know, with the big clumpy feet. And then on top of it, I had these really weird, I have a lot of German features, so I have like this really big nose, and I had these really weird, like, ears that stuck out. And people used to do some horrible things to my ears. In fact, one time they took like this pencil, and they took the eraser out, and then they squished the metal together, and they flipped it on the back of my ear, and it actually cut my lobe off of my neck.
God.
And, you know, it got to the point where I wore a mullet just so that way I didn't have to be picked on and I could protect my ears. And it took a long time for me to get over that. Now, you know, I was getting to the point where even my parents are considering plastic surgery because of how much damage they did to my ears. I have constant ringing into my ears because
wow.
of people doing that to me. And it took me a long time to accept that. And I was able to accept that, and I was actually able to get over that because I grew into my feet. You know, it didn't look so stupid anymore. But, you know, a lot of people can't grow into that stuff. So when do they come to the realization that, okay, this is who I am, and this is the best person I can be, and I am supposed to be just like this and accept that? How do they do that?
If I had the answer for that. I think what you see in these essays in My Body, My Worth is a lot of trying, like, grappling with that. So we have writers who are at the beginning of their careers, and they are struggling with that very thing. Who am I? Like, we have a wonderful essay that is written by a transgender person who is struggling with, you know, what box to check, male or female, on an application. So we have people who are struggling with their very identity to, you know, people at the further stages of their lives who have come to terms with that, and they're ready to say, you know what, this is who I am, I own it, I'm comfortable in my skin for the first time ever. So I think the essays run the gamut, and mm-hmm. I hope that our reader or our readers
find one of those essays that maybe answer that question for them, because that's such a personal answer. I don't think that you find it somewhere. I think it grows in you, and eventually it's there.
But there's hope.
There's a lot of hope. I mean, I don't know. I just turned 40 this year, and I feel like I'm finally there, maybe. Warren, are you there?
You know, I have to say that I've really been enjoying my body the last couple of years, and I don't know what changed that. I haven't gained any more weight or lost any more weight. You know, I've been pretty steady, but you know, I've just kind of it helps me do what I need to do, I guess. You know what I mean? And I'm grateful for that. You know, and it's fascinating to hear, you know, other people's stories about their relationship with their body and the things that they see when they're alone, or the things that they see when they're with other people, or how other people make them see their bodies. You know, it's pretty interesting, and just in terms of the perspective, the range of perspective, you know, that you get. I mean, I definitely know that there, depending upon the situation I'm in, sometimes it makes me see my body in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I've been really passionate about, being a photographer, and like I said, I've photographed a lot of people, and, you know, I love actually incorporating the scars, and I don't really want to Photoshop people, because I want to see their story. That's the story that they have. It's who they are. Mm-hmm. It's what made them so special. But when you look at these magazines and stuff like that, you see these women, like Twiggy was a good one. She was in her 60s, and she looked like she was in her 30s. I mean, they Photoshopped her so much that it was very misleading, and Britain even stood up and said, that's wrong. But, you know, what we do is we're portraying this version of what we believe is beauty. And the problem with it is that there's not any amount of plastic surgery that you can get to fix that. The only way that you're able to do this, honestly, is to get yourself morphed into a computer and have somebody Photoshop the hell out of you to bring out what they believe as true beauty. Because you can only go through so much surgery before it's going to start to show. So, you know, these kids are being fed this idea of beauty that isn't obtainable. And honestly, if you meet a lot of the stars out there that have been on these magazines, you wouldn't recognize them because of the fact that they have been so touched up on everything that's out there. What's your views on that? Is this harmful to our community? And how can we help our kids realize that this isn't the true beauty? This is just a computerized version of a true beauty.
Well, I think one of the, just to build on that, one of the worst things that we've done is to give our kids the tools to Photoshop themselves with all of these filters. So there are pictures, my girls, like I said again, they're 11, they'll have Snapchats, and I will say to them, these look nothing like you. I don't even know who these people are. We just constantly are changing our appearance ourselves. Now we don't have to have magazines do it for us. We can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also a teacher, and I teach freshmen, and I'm looking at these 18, 19-year-old girls who are trying to take a selfie in my class, and they have to keep deleting it because, oh, my chin looks weird, my face is tilted funny. So I think there's that constant self-changing, self-correcting built in. But one of the things for me, one of the eye-opening moments for me was my kids were 8 or 9 years old, and I looked around and realized I didn't have any pictures of me with them because I was always taking pictures of them and never putting myself in the photograph.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, when I was growing up, I had tons of pictures of me with my mom and my dad and the four of us or whatever. And my kids have none of that, and it was because we could see the pictures before they were developed, so of course, I was deleting them, or I didn't look good, or I had double chin in this one, or, you know, I wasn't wearing something flattering. And I think you just have to come to a point where you're like, this is who I am, and this is what I'm going to look like. And the best way to change that for our children is to model it.
Mm.
And just, you know, like, my kids know that I'm overweight. They're not blind, but I constantly say to them, I'm happy with who I am. It's okay. I'm like, I feel good about myself, and I try to just model that for them so that they believe it, maybe. Maybe I'll believe it, too. But one thing I just want to touch on really quick is when I was reading these essays, it was super helpful for me to see that body image is not just about weight. And
that's true.
When you are the fat girl, you think it is for everybody and for everyone. And you think the skinny girl has perfect life. And so to read these heartbreaking stories about people who felt they were too short or too black or too brown or whatever, there was a universality to it, and I just felt such connective tissue with these writers, and I really hope that our readers feel that.
Yeah, and I want to add on that too, because Amy, you brought up a really good aspect of the collection too, and that there's also the aspect of an illness too that gets touched upon in the book as well, and deformity or amputation, and I think the one thing that we really I think wanted to make sure that we address with this collection too is that like Amy said, the body image movement or body positivity movement, it has to include all the voices. It can't just be about weight. It's definitely a part of that, but there are many different parts parts of our body where when we lose or we see that they're missing, that have an effect on us.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Well, ladies, we are just about out of time. It's gone by really fast, and I've had a wonderful conversation with you both. How can people find...
Here. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. How can people find your book? Because I think it's going to be very important for other people to not only experience other people's stuff, realize that they're not alone, but it might help them in their own self, self-recollection of their own self.
Yeah, so the book will be coming out in alliance with Body Awareness Month, and it should be out by the end of February, early March. You can stay up to date by going to www.mybodymywords.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, and that's just @mybodymywords.
Well, thank you, ladies. I wish you both the best. I'm glad you decided to take on this project. I wish it all the best, and hopefully it will really help people along the way.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. All right, guys, we're going to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, we have so much more, so don't go anywhere.
Hi, I'm internationally exhibiting artist Jason Dowd, and I released one of my most profound photographic collections to date, my 3D collection. Since 2009, I've looked for ways to bring my art to life in ways that would amaze my audience. After a rare malfunction at Disney, I realized that 3D was the way to go. Now the series can be seen in galleries all the way across the United States. If you want to see this collection, contact my studio, Imagination Art Studios, by visiting www.imaginationartstudios.com and ask how. While you're there, check out my award-winning Dreams, Nightmares, Fears, and Fantasy collection, as well as my Morbid Sensations collection. Again, that's www.imaginationartstudios.com. All right, everybody, that's about a wrap. The show's just about over, and I know that I had a great time with you guys, and I know our guests had a great time with you, and hopefully they inspired you to follow in their footsteps. But before I go, I have some things that I want to announce that are happening in the Imagination Art Studios realm. We have just released our brand new show called A Day in the Life Of, and it features Jennifer McGill from the Mickey Mouse Club. She takes us on a tour of Hollywood Studios where all the magic took place for the Mickey Mouse Club. She tells us stories about Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, and so much more. You're not going to want to miss that. That is on iastelevision.com. Go sign up for the Roku channel, or you can find it on our AME television channel as well on YouTube. So go check it out there. And we just released our brand new Little Red Riding Hood mask collection. That's on imaginationartstudios.com. So check that out as well. We want to see what you guys think about it. And please, when you do see either the show or the photos, please let us know what you thought about it on Twitter or Facebook. We love comments. All right, guys, that's all we have for you guys this week. We will be back again next week, same time, same channel. If you don't know what that is, here we go. It is every Friday at 7 o'clock a.m. Eastern Standard Time on AMFM247.com, and there are 11 AMFM stations across the United States. We are also on the same network every Saturday at 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So two different shows, four different people, and you're going to want to tune in to both of them to see what we have going on. WKLAP every Friday at 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's an internet radio station. And we are on Radio Love, that's LUV.com, every Saturday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You're not going to want to miss us there either. We are also on iTunes and iHeart On Demand. And if you want to go to iHeart or iTunes, you get the show for everybody else. That's like our VIP package. So go check that out. And all the links are on our website. You can also sign up for our newsletter. We're going to be doing a newsletter here in 2018 to let you know what's going on, bring you some really cool contests and so much more. We got a lot of things that we have planned for 2018 that is going to take this show and make it a lot more interactive. And of course, if you have a story out there, you're an artist, you want to be on our show, write us on our website or on any of our social media networks. We will get back to you and see what we can do to get you on here, because we are the voice of artists everywhere. All right, that's all we have for you guys. Take care, have a safe week, be inspired, and we'll see you again next week. Keep those creative juices flowing. Good night, everybody.
That's the end?
We're done. Calm down, people. Calm down. Okay? That's it.